Flim dog.
Damn, Flim dog.
Hear you. Welcome back, Grizz Nation, to another episode of The Long View. I'm your host, Parker Fleming. This is a podcast on the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network, alongside GBB Live, the Core 4 podcast, the 3&D podcast, and the Starting 5 podcast. So if you haven't already, make sure you're subscribing to the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network, wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcast. Grizzly Bear Blues is a blog under SB Nation. You can find it on the web at grizzlybearblues.com or on Twitter at SBN Grizzlies. We got a very fun show for y'all today. We got a special guest. He is a writer for the Action Network. He's a podcast host for them as well. Also for Locked On NBA and Locked On Nuggets. You may know him on Twitter as Hardwood Paroxysm. This is Matt Moore. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So I got to ask before we really get started into this is you have had this grizzly at the Grizzlies mascot at your podium for your profile picture for so long. So why that one? Especially if you say in your bio you hate every team. So why is the Grizzly get that honor right there?
You know, look, I write about the NBA and I cover the NBA and I know a lot of these, you know, I know a lot of people in the league. And so you try and remove as much bias as you have, but like the first team that I was really a fan of was Memphis. My family's lived in Memphis. I grew up in Arkansas. They're the closest geographic team for me. I liked them a lot. Part of it was when I was first starting to write and I was like, I kind of want a team that I can kind of pull for. The idea was like, I'm going to choose a team that will never be good. Like they will never be good. And so like Memphis was like an obvious candidate, like small market. Team was in total disrepair at that point. This is like 2008, the year that Powell was traded. I was like, yep, they're never going to be good. And then two seasons later, the Grit Grind era begins. The reason I have that avatar is because basically the way I would say is like, he's fancy. Look at him. He's got a podium. Like I love the Grizz mascot. Like I love Grizz. I think it's just absolutely phenomenal. I love the wrestling act. I love everything about it. It's terrific. And to see him at the podium looking very official, just every time it cracks me up. So that's my favorite online picture to use is Grizz behind a podium.
I don't know whether to be like, man, that's really cool. But also just like the, oh, this team will never be good.
But it's true. But they are. That's the thing. Is like I thought that, and then Mike Conley happened, and Zebo happened, and Mark happened. Like that's how it goes. It's like you choose a team because you're like, I thought I was picking a team like the Kings, and I didn't, and it was great. That's why like I ran out of my house screaming when they beat the Spurs. Like when they beat the Spurs in the first round, like my neighbors were like, are you okay? Because I was just running around yelling. It was absolutely amazing. So love the fan base, love the city, love the team.
Absolutely. No, that's a really cool story right there. I mean, I've been following you for a long time and most of the time you've had that Grizzly at your podium. So, you know, with this being a Grizzlies podcast, I had to ask. And another reason why I have you on, obviously you're one of the greatest minds over in NBA Twitter and covering the league as a whole, but also too, you covered the Denver Nuggets. And I think there's a very kind of parallels between the two teams and how they've had their construction going forward. A problem the Grizzlies are experiencing right now is there's too many good players and not enough minutes. And I think, I think the Denver Nuggets had that kind of problem a couple years ago with Malik Beasley, Juan Hernan Gomez, Michael Porter Jr., guys like that. They've both drafted so well that they're now afforded to take risk in the draft. I mean, we saw that with Denver, with Michael Porter Jr. and Bol Bol, and the Grizzlies here recently with Zaire Williams and Santi Aldama. And they're both trying to build around a superstar in a small market. So I thought those were kind of similarities there. Do you kind of see those similarities, or as far as just like how each team has kind of just come up to be where they are right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the differences is that Memphis has had a leg up in getting Ja, right? Where Denver drafted Emmanuel Mudiay with their high pick, and that was a huge bust. You know, they got Jamal Murray seventh, and they thought, like, maybe this guy will be the guy, but Jamal wasn't really projected to be a superstar. But then in 2016, like, Jokic emerges, and he emerges out of the second round versus, like, Ja. Like, the minute he stepped on a floor, you were like, oh, okay. Like, you knew from the very beginning that Ja was electric and special and different and all the things that you want to hear about a potential franchise star. Like, he's the best player from the class, which, given that Zion exists, says a lot about both players, but mm-hmm. and how things have gone for them. But with Ja, like, having that kind of core piece that you can immediately build around, because Denver was still trying to figure things out. Like, Jokic was coming off of the bench as recently as like 2016, 17, mm-hmm. right? Like, they were still trying to make it work with Jusuf Nurkic, and they couldn't figure out how. And so Nurkic was starting, and Jokic was like, he should start. And, you know, but it was very apparent that Jokic needed to play more. The comparisons, I think, are transitioning to a real young roster and having confidence in that, having a coach that's able to get the most out of that assortment of players. I think you're absolutely right in the comparison where it's just like they have so much talent. They had to make some very hard decisions. And like, I talked to Tim Connelly about this going into the season where they traded Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez, that like going into that season, he was like, this is the year we're going to have to figure out who stays and who goes. Like, we can't keep all the young guys. We can't afford it. So we're going to have to figure out who's going to have to stay and who's going to have to go. And I think Memphis is probably approaching that, you know, pretty rapidly. You got guys like Brandon Clark, and, you know, you got Tyus and DeAnthony, and you just got so many guys that you're going to have to make some decisions on what's going to be the best fit around the roster and how to go forward. I think one of the things that Memphis deserves a lot of credit for is how, you know, the Longview podcast, right? Like,
yeah,
even trading Jay Crowder for Justice, which was such a phenomenal bust of a move.
Yep.
The idea of it was sound, even though, like, I disagree with it at the time. I felt at the time that them trading Jay was a mistake, because I was like, you're losing momentum here. Like, you're going to miss the playoffs because you traded Jay Crowder. Like, Jay's going to help you get into the playoffs. He's key in these situations. And I thought that the result of that would be that, okay, you know, they made the play-in in the weird circumstances, right? They probably would have made the playoffs otherwise if it hadn't been for the bubble. And they'll probably take a step back. And instead, last year, like, that was where I was like, oh, okay. Like, they knew what they had in the young guys to where they could afford to lose Jay and not lose momentum. Like, they could miss the playoffs and not lose momentum. And what I misjudged was how far along the curve was. And that says a lot about Ja. This says a lot about the supporting guys to be able to rebound from the disappointment of the bubble. And then last year, not only make the play-in, but then win that game to get those two games to get into the playoffs. Like, that shows you that they were better than I was grading them at the time of the Crowder trade. And that shows you those kind of moves. A lot of it, I'll say, with the Nuggets is it's about not just which moves you need to make, but about knowing when you need to step away from that ledge and not do that deal. That even though it might be like, but we could, it's so exciting if we, you need to keep and always have that view of where are you trying to get to and are you sure that move gets you there?
Right. Yeah, and one thing that's just very, like you said, like, you know, with the Jay Crowder stuff and the fact that they were still able to make the play-in, make the playoffs, even with the situations from last year, because, I mean, you could probably put Justice Winslow experience on par with Chandler Parsons. It just only happened for a season. Right. You didn't have Jaren Jackson Jr. for your entire season, and they were still able to do that. And also, I just liked how with that, they were able to kind of assess, like, okay, what's going to work for us going forward? They noticed they got killed in drop coverage against Utah. So they took the expiring with JV and flipped him for a center that gives you about similar stuff rebounding and defense wise, but you don't have to, you could throw Jaren Jackson Jr. in the fire if you need to. because Steven Adams won't care if he has 15 to 20 minutes a night. Or with Grayson Allen, you know that Desmond Bain and De'Anthony Melton are ready, so you flip him for a younger guy and 2 second round picks. And just they've kind of stayed with that long view since, and they traded up, got themselves in a good position to go get a great talent. I know Zaire Williams was kind of a – it wasn't a – I want to say a head scratcher, but it was definitely a surprise on draft night.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was a lot of people around the league saying that he wasn't going to fall to 17, and that probably is translated through the Josh Primo San Antonio Spurs pick. But they got themselves in a position where they could have added another guy next to John Jaren. They did that. And you kind of hit on it, and you said your conversation with Tim is just that season where it's like, okay, they're going to have to move on from some people. And, you know, I took notes here on this different uses of asset management. They turned Beasley and Hernan Gomez into a first-round pick that turned into Zeke, Najee, and some bench pieces. They lost Grant and Plumlee in free agency, and in their consolidation trade, or I guess it could be considered the first one because they didn't exactly unload the chest for him, but they traded away Gary Harris, RJ Hampton in a first-round pick and turned that into Eric Gordon. What do you think of that asset management? Because like you said, the Grizzlies are going to have to make this kind of decision down the road. Do you think like Denver – I wasn't a fan of the asset management from afar, but you offer a different perspective. Like, did you think that they could have managed it better? Or is it just one of those like, hey, sometimes you got to let guys walk in free agency because we're trying to win this year?
So a lot of this gets into the details that are under the hood. And this is where I think fans from afar can miss a lot. Like you have to be, I think that writers and reporters close to the team can't see the forest for the trees sometimes, but I think oftentimes the opposite is also true, that fans will only see the forest. They see wins and losses or points and rebounds, and they don't see what's going on under the hood. So like, let's take Malik Beasley, right? So Malik's a phenomenal talent, great shooter, right? Brings a lot of energy. Fans liked him because he makes shots, and all fans like it when guys make shots. Mm-hmm. But Malik, one, wanted to get paid. Like, it was just very apparent that he was like, I want to get paid. And he knew that he wasn't going to get paid if he didn't get more minutes. And he wasn't going to get more minutes because the defense wasn't good enough. Like, they couldn't afford it. And they already had, they had at the time, Jamal Murray and Gary Harris. And then they were adding on like Jeremy Grant. Like, they are adding on all these pieces. So they knew that they needed to consolidate. The other thing that's really funny about that move, they will deny this, but I feel confident from talking to people, there was a secret part of that trade. That was a multi-team trade.
Yeah.
And as part of that trade, they got Houston's pick. What they also got, though, was Clint Capella got dealt to Atlanta. Clint Capella is one of the players that absolutely gave Jokic fits every single year. Houston was in the way at that point. This is before Tillman took over and like submarined the franchise. The Harden-Capella combo, Denver could not, they couldn't beat it. Jokic can't, you can't play Denver's scheme, which is too on the level because Harden's too good of a passer. And in the middle of it, even if you play drop, Capella kills you with a lob because Jokic struggles with guys that are super athletic. Right. So what they did in this trade was they helped Houston go small ball, which helped Denver. Denver felt way better about facing Houston in a playoff matchup, which ultimately never happened. Because Capella was gone. So like, this is part of like this whole kind of scheme thing. The Jeremy Grant trade, they traded a first round pick for Jeremy Grant. That was like their big celebration. They were absolutely thrilled that summer to get Jeremy
Grant. At OKC one, right?
Yeah, they traded a first rounder to OKC. And it was he came off the bench for Paul Millsap to start. By the playoffs, he was starting. And he was a big reason why they made the Western Conference Finals, right? And so in free agency, they thought they were getting him back. And like, this is something for Memphis fans to know, is that you can, like, he can say he's coming back. You can feel, the front office can feel like he's coming back. Everyone can be like, yeah, we're on the same page. And then it just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
They matched the exact same offer for Jeremy of 3 years, $60 million to the Pistons. They had the exact same money on the table. And Jeremy chose Detroit. Now, Jeremy chose Detroit for a lot of reasons. One, he didn't want to be third fiddle behind Jokic and Jamal Murray. He feels like he is capable of being like an on-ball all-star type of guy. good luck to him. But the other thing is that, and this is like a very valid thing, is that Jeremy wanted to play for a black coach and a black GM, which Detroit offers, right?
Absolutely.
He's 100% within his rights and like no argument there. Like that's a personal decision. And I think it's cool that that was part of his decision-making process. I think it's important to respect that and consider what it means that there's so few options on in the league for that kind of an opportunity says a lot. However, like the Nuggets are then hamstrung. Like losing Mason Plumlee, it was a bummer, but he got paid a huge deal. They weren't going to be able to keep him. You can't pay that much for a backup center.
Right.
So now they go into the season and they're without Jeremy Grant, right? They take this huge step backwards and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. They start off slow. They wind up being fine because Jokic becomes an MVP candidate. Jamal Murray started off slow, started to pick up. They're playing really well, but they get to this point where they have an option to go get Aaron Gordon. And what they have to do is they have to give up Gary Harris, which at the time, like now it's like, yo, Gary Harris. So what? Harris was there from the start and he and Jokic were like part of like the beginning of this team coming together. Like it would, honestly, the comparison is Dylan. That's the comparison is it's like that's really the comparison. It would be moving Dylan, who's been there from the start, who's, you know, been a part of the success, who's had those big moments, right? And moving him because the opportunity gets you Aaron Gordon, which now allows you to play Aaron Gordon and MPJ. It gives you a wing defender, yada, yada, yada. And that was their move to go all in. But that was difficult for them. And they didn't want to give up RJ Hampton. They believe RJ Hampton's going to be a good player in the league. I think he is.
I think so, he is too.
Yeah, they gave up a lot. They were trying to give Bol Bol in that deal and Orlando wouldn't go for it. They wanted Hampton. So that was, even though on paper, it looks like they gave up very little for Aaron. They gave up a lot of what I would call emotional equity in order to get Aaron. It was the end of like the real rebuilding era where it was the young guys and everybody was together. And it was like, we're all going to do this together. That was like the front office being like, if we're going to get to the next level, we got to break it up and we got to change it. And it was a significant move, but I think ultimately it's going to prove to be the right one.
Yeah. I mean, before Murray got hurt, that Murray, Jokic, Porter Jr. and Gordon quartet killed people. Like I thought they were, I actually still had them this year being the team that represents the West in the finals, because I think if they can get Murray back, even use that February to April to kind of just get him going. I mean, it was very encouraging. Last night I saw him getting some warm-up shots and doing some dribble stuff before the game. And, you know, I'm a big Murray fan. So that was very encouraging to see, but no, those are all good points. Like the asset management, it's not going to be the best. At least they turned Beasley and Hernan Gomez into something, especially the unique helping out another team to help you out as well. That's like galaxy brain levels of asset management right there. And like you just kind of highlight just the nature of free agency. You just never know. Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, part of it too is it's about relationships with agents too.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say this, like if a guy, I'll be really just transparent here. If a guy signs with Clutch, that's like, it's going to be a difficult negotiation, right? Mm-hmm. Like they have a very brute force approach. We're seeing that with Ben Simmons. We saw it with Eric Bledsoe.
We've seen it in New Orleans. Yeah.
Yep. We've seen it consistently. Like Clutch positions guys where they want guys. And that's where the new NBA is. So like if one of the Grizzlies, and I'm not sure where all of Grizzlies players are at in terms of representation. I am bad about remembering such things, but that's part of it. But it's not even just Clutch, right? It's just, if the front office doesn't have a good relationship with an agent, cause that happens a lot. That can cause complications if the player is, you know, going through a personal thing. Like here's another example is Elton Brand basically had a deal to return to the Los Angeles Clippers and they got Baron Davis and it was supposed to be great and everything was going to be awesome. Baron's, I believe, wife had family in Philadelphia and wanted to be closer. So he left. Like these are the decisions that wind up happening. And it's not like fans just always kind of ascribe it to wins and losses and the franchise and whether or not the front office is good or the coach or whatever else. And it's like, no, like it's not these things. There are so many more layers and there's so many more that like we don't as media don't ever find out about, right? They do a good job of keeping that stuff secret. But whenever you get like little glimpses behind the curtain, you do start to see like, oh, like there's like a lot of stuff going on here that's about personal dynamics and personal politics that it's not the biggest thing, but it definitely influences some of the decisions that are made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I haven't heard really any of those stuff happen in Memphis yet, but as guys are getting out of these rookie deals and stuff, and sure to probably hear a little bit here and there, but back with like the asset management and like consolidation stuff, like with the Grizzlies, that stuff's going to come up real soon. It sucks that there's the landscape right now. Like there's not a star that actually would fit. Cause people talk about Ben Simmons, Damian Lillard, guys like that. But I mean, with Simmons is kind of clunky still at the moment. And then you have Ja, you don't need Dame. I know people brought up Simmons with Memphis, but it's just weird because with Philly, you're only going to give them a role player package, and that Morey doesn't want that. But they have Kyle Anderson and Tyus Jones expiring next offseason. In the 2022-2023, they're going to have Brooks, Adams, and Brandon Clark. And Brandon Clark, they'll get their restricted free agency rights as well.
I'm getting sad as you say this. I'm just like, oh, man. Like,
I know, right?
I don't want slow-mo on another team. Like, I hated that deal. I like John Hollinger and I like went like five rounds about it. Like, I hated that deal at the time. And like Kyle's turned into one of my absolute like favorite Grizzlies. Like he's a tourniquet. He slows things. Like he manages things. He makes so many big plays. Like, and it's killer.
A funky player too. He's
just, yeah. And then change it up. It's great. And you know, maybe they'll re-sign him. I will say this. So look at Denver, right? Aaron Gordon is a name in that it's like, oh yeah, he's the guy that has like maybe the best dunk contest appearance of all time, right?
Yeah, Uncle Drew.
Yeah. But Aaron was considered a disappointment. You know, he was the name in Orlando, but like their best player was Nikola Vucevic. Like that's not arguable. Like Vuce was way better on multiple levels. Even with defense included, like Vuce is just like a better player.
Mm-hmm.
But what Denver did was they traded multiple assets and they gave Aaron like a massive, massive contract because of what Aaron provides for them. Like they have everything else. He provides what's for them. And for Memphis, I think they may want to look at something similar in terms of don't go like one, Ben's, there's a lot there. Like there's just, yeah. You know, like is Ben going to, you know, unless one, Clutch is never going to want him in Memphis. Like, let's just be real. Clutch is never going to want him in Memphis. They're wrong, but they're never going to want him in Memphis. Two, he'd have to do the thing that he has not said, which is why most teams won't touch him, which is he'd have to say like, yeah, I'll play off ball. I'll play power forward. That's fine. Like if he just said like, yeah, I'll short roll, then yeah, do it. Like you kill like a Jaren Simmons switching combo. Holy crap. Right. But like, that's just not realistic. But I do think that like as good as I think Adams has been offensively so far. And like, I'm a huge Steven Adams fan from his time in OKC, like loved covering him in the playoffs. Like I would go to every single availability. I think he was underrated for what he did. Like I thought he should have won Rookie of the Year that year. His impact has been great. Adams is not the same defensive guy he was a couple of years ago because of the amount of miles on him. Like he put so many miles and played so physical for a lot of years in the mid 2000s, 2010s rather. And that I think has brought down his defensive ability, and Memphis's early defensive start shows this. So to me, I have questions about if Jaren's ever really going to be ready for a full small time, like small ball starting five position. So I think getting somebody that can play next to him as a switchable center, and there are going to be guys that come available in the next couple of years as they get better defensively, right, who I think will be in that kind of position that aren't superstars, but instead are just like, oh, this is like the move that's going to like add a lot to them because you already have Ja and you already have Bane and you already have Jaren. You add whatever else that missing component is. That I think is a better approach than, you know, thinking about getting Dame Lillard or, you know, Bradley Beal, right? Like one, as much as like, this should not be how it is, but it's Memphis. I don't want it to be that way.
Right.
Like if you're a star and you want to win, why wouldn't you want to go to Memphis? You get to play with Ja, you have Jaren, you have shooters, you have defense, you have a good coach, you have a loyal fan base that loves basketball. Like, why not? But this is the NBA, right? So you have to manage those expectations. But if you do, if you start from a position of who can we find that people are going to think that we overpay because he's not that great, but next to our already great players, he puts us over the top. Like, that's the difference that I think you got to look for. And if you can do that, like, that can take you to the Western Conference Finals or beyond.
Yeah, I had to, as far as like the switchable five next to Jaren, I have this conversation so many times with just other people that really pay attention to the team a lot. And like, one thing that we always ask is, why can't Brandon Clark or Xavier Tillman be 6'10 or 6'11? Because that would be perfect, but they're both 6'8. Like, I think maybe, you know, like, I mean, Rashawn Holmes won't be available for a while, but like, what about like a Mitchell Robinson or something like that? I think I think getting an alley-oop threat for Ja that could play above the rim, like, even like, man, I wish like in that second, they like found a way to in the second round to even get someone like Jericho Sims.
Right.
Like, to like develop, like, because they have a lot of guys towards the end of the bench that are those like developmental guys that are going to kind of shuttle between the hustle and the Grizzlies a lot. But none of those guys are that like above the rim threat that you're kind of looking for, the switchy big that can protect the rim, catch lobs, low usage guy.
So. A guy to look out for that right now, you're going to be like, are you crazy? But look at where he's going to be in 2 to 3 years is Wendell Carter Jr.
Okay.
That sounds crazy. I know. I hated it.
Because he signed the contract extension now too.
Yeah. I hated him in Chicago. I was like, he's such a drag. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's just playing for himself. Like, what is this? Like, he pulled down that Bulls team last year. Like, I thought trading him was a plus for the Bulls. I thought it was addition by subtraction before they got Vooch just to trade WCJ. And then I've seen what he's doing in Orlando, and there's like a lot of positive signs there. Like, just be on the lookout for what WCJ looks like in like the next couple of years. But the question there, I think, is interesting. I want to ask you this, like, do you want them to do, because the Nuggets waited, right? The Nuggets went through, they made the playoffs in 2018. I'm sorry, 2019, right? Made the second round, no major moves.
Right.
And then before no moves going into that season, they've added Paul Millsap, right? Like veteran all-star. And you can say, maybe that's a move that they can make. 1920, they bring in Jeremy Grant, right? And then last year they were left in the wake of Jeremy's decision. And then they made the trade mid-season. Mm-hmm. My question for you is like, they missed the playoffs in 2016 and 2017 and 2018 when they lost on the last game of the season. They would have been in the play-in under the current format. Under those, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of like a comparison point here. To if you put like the Nuggets 2018 to the bubble year and then last year compared to the 2019, like the question is, do you think that they're ready to add a guy or do they need to wait a few years?
When it comes to Memphis, I honestly kind of want to see where they finish this year.
Yeah.
Like, I think, and this is even a question I had had for you too. It's just like, what is that threshold to make that all-in trade or that consolidation trade? Because, you know, you had some where it's like, say you have Phoenix, for example. They were a team that hovered around 10 to 12 in the West. They made their move for Chris Paul, and that took them, granted, people can kind of argue with different stuff with the Suns in their path to the finals. But at the end of the day, yep, they made it to the finals. Yeah, Toronto, who had been at the top of the East for all these years, and then all of a sudden they made that Kawhi Leonard trade and then the Marc Gasol trade. I think, you know, if they finish this year between that 4 and 6, I think 6 more, like 5 or 6 more likely. Sure. Like, if somebody becomes available over the summer, especially, I mean, you have 3 first round picks. You have Brandon Clark's extension that, or his restricted free agency that a team could have. You have Dylan Brooks. You basically have 2 of Desmond Bane, Dylan Brooks, and De'Anthony Melton to choose from. And I think when it comes to prioritization for the Grizzlies to keep, it goes Bane, Brooks, Melton.
Yeah.
It gets, and then you have Adams, 17 mil coming off the books that next season. It's very interesting. 3 first round picks in the next draft. And with, you know, how up and down the Lakers look, you could be looking at 2 top 20 picks and then a 28th pick. So, and plus the Warriors pick, that's really good. It's really tough to say though right now, because you don't have that star asking out, and nobody is ever going to be like, hey, let's trade this guy.
So a lot of what Denver did, if we're comparing the models, I think a lot of what Denver did, there's two things that they kept in mind. They were opportunistic instead of, for lack of a better word, thirsty. Mm-hmm. And then they were extremely patient to make sure they didn't get out over their skis. So like, here's a good example. 16, 17, they miss the postseason. They're still not good, but they could tell that they're kind of heading in that direction, right? Before the 2017-18 season, draft night, they are in talks for a deal for Kevin Love. It's a three-way deal. They're going to trade Gary Harris and some other pieces for Kevin Love. The Cavs come back and they ask for significantly more in that deal. And Memphis, and you know, Denver walks away. The deal falls apart on multiple ends. Like, there was a three-team trade and it fell apart in multiple directions.
Yeah.
So they lose out on getting Kevin Love. Gary Harris, who had been involved in those talks, a week later flies to Atlanta and helps wine and dine and convince Paul Millsap to join Denver. Like, that's like a good sign of like how much of a professional Gary is.
Yeah.
Millsap comes, right? So like, they walk away from one deal, they get Millsap. Millsap helps their defense the next year. They make it to the game 82. The following season, they make the playoffs. Like, Millsap was a big reason why their defense wasn't a complete dumpster fire during his time here. They were in talks for other players and were close on other deals, but they would walk away from it. Times there were players like Jimmy Butler, right? They were on the market. And Denver, if they had thrown the house at it, they probably outbid Philadelphia. But they considered locker room fit and how much it was going to cost them. It was about like, what does this take to get? Yeah. And this is where, again, like, you got to be careful about like, but they could get this guy and think about that. Like, well, okay. But you're putting a lot on that player being the difference. And like, that player then has to make up for what you already lost, which was good because that's why they're involved in the deal, and then add on top of it. And that combination is pretty tough. This is why I think what Denver did in terms of, all right, they traded a first round pick, which they didn't need. They already had their rotation. They were already deep. They didn't need that first rounder. They traded that guy for Jeremy Grant. Grant comes in and like, is that guy that they needed him to be. They lose Jeremy Grant. And so they wind up giving more assets to get Aaron Gordon, but they gave up Gary Harris, who, if there was anybody they were going to move when Jamal kind of emerged, Gary was probably going to be the guy. RJ Hampton, a talented player, but they already, again, had a star point guard. And then picks, which again, they don't need. So you have to manage all this kind of stuff. I think that's one of the things. The draft stuff gets really complicated because eventually you literally run out of room on the roster. Like, you just have guys that do not get minutes because your team is too deep and too good. Like, right now, you know, they're doing a good job, I think, of finding minutes for Zaire. But we'll see how it goes this season. Because, like, if you're in the midst of a playoff run, finding time for rookies is difficult. You know, like, if you're in high-pressure situations, it gets difficult. So adding another rookie on top of that, that's where it gets tough. But that does allow you to at least to take swings because you're like, look, we can afford to trade these picks. We've got our rotation. Then the problem immediately shifts, though, because, like, now Denver's in the spot where they got to play Bones Highland because they went top heavy and now they're extremely top heavy and they need that young talent that's on affordable contracts because they can't pay anybody because their caps wound up. It's a balancing act between having all these assets and using them to find a team that's good enough and then paying for the team that's good enough and then having to use those draft assets to supplement the team.
Speaking of the Nuggets being so top heavy, it really, really pains me, as somebody who likes Denver, to see them have to rely on Campazzo as much as they do. And so I, like I said earlier, I was really high on RJ Hampton. I had him 6 on my board for the 2020 draft just because, you know, his tools, his size as a guard. He was working a lot with Mike Miller over in pre-draft. So I was like, okay, if you add a jump shot with all his other skills, he's a top 10 guy in this class. But seeing him being buried for Campazzo, it just pained me so much, man. But no, I definitely get it, because that's one thing too that you gotta kind of be mindful of is, you know, if you're gonna make this consolidation trade, are you gonna be top heavy enough to contend? And if something goes down to where one of those top guys is hurt, is your bottom strong enough to really kind of make sure the engine keeps running? And I think Denver's done a pretty good job of that so far. They have decent, I like their backup front court guys with Jamichael Green and Jeff Green, a lot of versatility there. It's just the backcourt right now. It's extremely shaky. It's a lot of reliance, like you said, on Bones Highland and his development.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is you're gonna make misses, and like the front office. This is what I will say I appreciate about Denver. I've talked to front offices before that will defend every move, like every they're just defensive about every single move, and that I'm always like, come on, like it's okay. You're gonna make misses. I'm not killing you for it. You know, I'm not a guy that's like, if you make a miss, that's a deciding factor. Like Denver will admit, like, no, we missed on this. Like they traded the Rudy Gobert pick, and they're like, yeah, we missed. We didn't think he was gonna be that good. We were wrong. We were way wrong. Like we just were. We were wrong. Yeah. They traded the Donovan Mitchell pick. Same deal. They're like, would I do that again? No, I would not do that again. Are you crazy? I would take Donovan Mitchell. It's Donovan Mitchell, right? Like with Campazzo, I don't think that they consider it a mistake yet. They like the team really likes him. They like what he brings. They like his professionalism. They like his attitude. They like how much of a pest he is. They have a lot of respect for his international experience, et cetera, et cetera. I keep watching stuff on and being like, I've compared it in Denver to, I feel like I'm in Parks and Recreation with little Sebastian, where I'm Ben and I'm just like, okay, it's a horse that's kind of small. Like that's how I feel about Campazzo, where everyone's like in love with him. And I'm just like, he gets blown by because he can't get in the way. He just literally not big enough to get in the way. He can't shoot. So this is the difference between him and like Juan and like Barea is like, if he comes off of a pick, nobody respects it. Everybody's just like, okay, cool. Shoot. Good job. It's tough. The combination of him and a small ball backcourt or front court is tough, right? You need Campazzo is not a good fit for their roster and their roster is not a good fit for Campazzo. Like Campazzo plays really well next to Jokic. And the answer to that's always like, well, everyone plays well next to Jokic. Yeah. He specifically does play great next to Jokic. Like even relative to the average player, he and Jokic understand how to play together a little bit more. But with the bench unit, it really struggles. Like they have the worst bench unit in the league right now. And I think a lot of it is because Campazzo is not a worse point guard than some of the other players that are running point, but he's too small and not a shooter. If they just had like a normal NBA backup point guard, like Ish Smith, right? Like Ish Smith, any of the guys on Memphis, literally any of the guards on Memphis, then they're in a pretty good shape. But that combination, but that's an example of where they wanted to really go in when they brought in Campazzo last offseason?
I think it was last offseason because Memphis almost brought him in. He would have been the third guy behind Tyus.
When they brought him in, the idea was like, we want all these playmakers. Like you need guys that can make plays for others, especially with how we play ball. And that's good. But ultimately what they've done is they've created a bunch of guys that can make plays for others and nobody who's like, F it, I'm taking this shot. And that's where Bones Highland comes in. Like Bones needs to play. And that's becoming apparent because Bones is willing to shoot. And even being willing to shoot presents a different threat than guys that come off the pick and there's just nothing there. So that's like an example of how good intentions and good conceptual framework I think can backfire. They would refute this and say like, no, you're going to see like Campazzo is good for us, et cetera. But I think it's been a mistake. I think they'd be better off with an NBA size point guard.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I'm going to move back to the Grizzlies here real quick. I'm going to ask you just a few more questions. Just one, when it comes to like that consolidation trade and just having those assets to do that, I mean, with the Grizzlies, like I mentioned, they have Dylan Brooks, D'Anthony Melton, Kyle Anderson, Tyus Jones, Brandon Clark, three firsts next season. They have all their future picks plus the Warriors pick as well. Where do you rank their potential trade package in a consolidation trade? Like it could even be as small as like an Aaron Gordon one or like as big as like that next all-star trade.
I think the biggest thing is you need options, right? Because you don't know who you're going to be dealing with. I'm trying to think of like what would be the move, right? Let's do a conceptual framework. Let's say that the Minnesota, and I think the Wolves are going to be good this year, but let's say that the Wolves flame out again and Kat's like, I've had it. I'm done. I'm out. Okay. And the Grizzlies are then able to say, okay, what do you want? Right? Do you want ready-made players now? Because we have, you know, Jaren Jackson on an extension. we have, I know that we're paying people, but Cat's obviously an upgrade, right? Yeah. We have Cat, we have one of the guards that you can add, and that's the starter caliber. Do you want draft compensation? Okay, we've got this array of picks, and we'll throw in one of our good young players. Like, again, this is where it gets tough, because it's like the idea of Memphis trading Bane is painful to me. Like, that literally makes me sick to think about Desmond being traded. But like, that's like a player that would be very valuable, right? So conceptually there, if it's a lesser caliber player, but a really impactful one, maybe that's where you're able to say, you're just able to go like, hey, we got Dylan Brooks, right? Capable, good defensive guard. We'll have some scoring nights for you. Brooks and some draft compensation for whatever the other piece is. You have the ability to mix and match these things, and it just depends on what the value is and where you'd be willing to go. Like, this is, I agree with you 100% that you don't do the trade this year, because like last night's a good example of like, I wouldn't say I'm frustrated with Jaren. I would say that I'm underwhelmed by Jaren in terms of, I think the injuries just set his development back so far, but like, last night's a good example with like his ability to space the floor and everything that he brings to the table of what he can do for you. The defense for the team overall has been horrible, but I've really liked a lot of like Jaws backup secondary defensive playmaking in terms of protecting the rim. I like a lot of what I've seen there. So like there's a lot of stuff with Jaren that I'm really encouraged about. And you want to wait and see and make sure. And you obviously just signed him to the extension, right? Like, you want to see how this goes. You've got time. I think you want to see how this goes, because look, if Desmond just like keeps, if this is who Desmond is,
that's a good shooting guard.
That's the guy that you would trade for, right? Like, that's the guy that you would trade for, because if you have a player as good as what Desmond has looked like, and you have Ja who's playing at I'll go ahead and say it, MVP type level.
Oh, he is.
Yeah. And you have Jaren looking better at game by game, getting healthier. You can have Steven Adams at center and it's fine. Right. That's going to be like the next step, though. I will say Utah, they were overwhelmed, right? Won the first game, but Utah was just like, they're a way better team. You make the playoffs this year. Now you got to start analyzing the matchup and be like, what is killing us in the playoffs and how do we solve it? Like, what do we not have that we're going to need? For Denver, it was defense. So like, they got Paul Millsap out before they made the playoffs. And they needed a wing defender who was faster and who could also space the floor. They needed basically a stretch four, which is why they got Jeremy Grant. And that's why ultimately they got Aaron Gordon. Aaron's not a great shooter, but his athleticism, that was the other thing, is they realized they needed to get more athletic. They needed size and athleticism that could defend. And that's why they got Aaron. So like, the needs evolve, but you have to address what you need and what's keeping you from getting to top four seed in the West. And maybe Memphis gets there this year. I mean, they've looked phenomenal to me, even with the terrible defense. So I think there's a lot of paths, but with the packages, you mostly just want to keep the powder dry. You want to wait and see. And if you wind up losing some assets because you're running out of time on them, that's what Denver did with Malik Beasley, right? Like, they didn't get a star player from Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez, two rotation players in this league. They got nothing for it. Like, Zeke's been fine, right? Zeke's got some upside. Zeke looked good last year. They didn't get like a major upgrade for those guys, but you kept them in part to wait to see if you could get in these deals. And you're going to have to accept there will be some attrition of your assets as you go.
And I think really we're like, the Malik Beasley situation is kind of like what we're seeing with Brandon Clark right now. Like,
yeah,
he's not really playing. It's a weird thing, because Taylor Jenkins, he's committed to playing Kyle Anderson at the four. And I definitely agree with that move. He's a lot better at the four. Jaren Jackson, he's a four at this point. It's just a weird positional fit, because Brandon Clark is a four in a threes body, and he doesn't have the outside shot to be a three.
Right.
So
Golden State wanted him last year. You know,
It was like Clark and 10 for Looney. And I remember reading your report on it, actually.
Yeah.
But
there was talk about that. And I think Clark still has a lot of interest in the league. Like, clearly the changes to his shot mechanic hurt a lot.
Yeah, it sucks a lot. I'm a huge Clark guy, but that sucks. Like, happened with his shot. But yeah, and even then, like, I saw like somebody tweet, it's like, well, it looks like Clark's out of the rotation. I click on quote tweets, and it's like literally like people of like 10 different teams being like, oh, I would like Brandon Clark.
Yeah.
But All right. I'll ask you one last question. Kind of has to do with just kind of the here and now on both teams. And there's no denying that the Grizzlies and Nuggets are both building around special talents. I mean, obviously, Jokic is – he doesn't get all that – I think he is one of the three best players in the league right now, and it's kind of a shame that he doesn't get that respect, even though he just won MVP and stuff like that. I watched him last night and just in person and just aesthetically just one of the craziest basketball players I've ever watched. Like, he threw one of those, like – opposite post swing passes to the corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like just gave myself a little like Jesus Christ, because like I didn't see that coming at all. There is one possession where Xavier Tillman literally hounded all 23 seconds on the shot clock, but Jokic was able to just get like one little scoop, and it's like great offense beats good defense on that one. But he's a special talent. And then Ja Morant obviously taking a real legit, I would say, superstar leap. I would say this is a superstar leap for him getting into this conversation, where now it's not even like, okay, is it all-star or no? It's more of like, okay, is he going to be all NBA or not?
Yeah.
And one thing that's just really cool with those two guys is that both teams have really just played to both of their strengths. It started out as their passing strengths, but it's evolved in their scores, and really kind of built these like heliocentric offenses around these two guys. That's really kind of helped them, you know, get out to where they are right now. So what do you think of how both teams are building towards their heliocentricity, and just where could they improve on it? Whether it's more shooting, more cutters, better defenders, how do you think it's going with the construction around those two right now?
The big key, I think, is don't actually go too far in heliocentrism. So
kind of like Houston and Dallas.
Yeah. So that's like the big key here, is what you don't want to, in my opinion, what you don't want to do is you don't want to have it be jaw dribbles for 35 seconds and, you know, 20 seconds, and then makes a move, drives, or, you know, backs up and shoots, and the four guys are standing and waiting. It's just not, it disengages guys. It wears down Morant. It'll take years off his career. Like, one of the reasons, like, Harden suffered from the foul stuff. Harden hasn't looked the same for a couple of years, I think, because he's just had so many freaking miles on him. With Ja, I think having it be a system where he's such a good passer, right? But he's a passer that's able to see movement too. So have guys cutting and then make the extra pass. Like, if Ja's assists are not high, but the overall team rate is high when he's on the floor, that's a great thing. Because a lot of what when the Nuggets are playing at their best, it is not Jokic does a thing and then they score. It is usually Jokic does a thing that causes another thing that causes another thing. Jokic gets it back and then flips it and then gets an assist. Like, they have built this system around a bunch of guys that know how to play basketball and Michael Porter Jr. And that, like, combination of plays is one where they're able to generate open looks and good basketball and get cuts and get open stuff. And yes, Jokic's singular talent enables and is the engine for that. But Jokic isn't trying to generate everything. Like, he doesn't want as many touches, I don't think, as he gets. I think he's like, it's better in his hands than anybody else. And there's like, they're able to win because of that. But they're at their best when my co-host on Locked On Nuggets, Adam Morris, says the ball is popping. When the ball is moving all over the place, and Jokic will start it by catching the defense off guard with a pass that they're not expecting, which then forces them to rotate and adjust, and then over and over again. Kind of the same thing with Ja, where his individual athleticism and ability to shift through multiple bodies will create creases for him to pass, and then the defense is in rotation, and that opens open shots, and they have good shooters. They got Bane, right? Like, Dylan's inconsistent, but I still believe in Dylan. They have guys like Anthony Melton, Jaren's, you know, hitting threes. They have these guys being able to do it. Having a balance between Ja's individual superlative excellence and using the talent that they have to have multiple guys creating and have threats. Cause that's one of the reasons I think that their offense is so good right now, is that when they key in on Ja, they've got Bane and Melton who are able to make you pay for it because they can dribble, they can shoot, and they can pass. And keeping that and not going into, we have four shooters and Ja Morant, I think is really crucial for maintaining it. The Nuggets honestly are not as good right now in part, like they're still a really good team and they're probably going to wind up with 50 wins because Jamal Murray does so much for them as a creator off of the dribble, just by being a guy that can create shots, and he's a much improved passer. So like they, you need that. You need more than one guy that can do it for you. I think the heliocentrism has proven to be a fool's errand when you run into the way that teams can game plan and wear you down in a playoff setting.
Right. No, that's a very good point. And you brought up, you know, just the playmaking aspect of it all. I remember asking Taylor Jenkins one time about like how much small ball he's been doing and stuff like that. It was back last season when they were doing more of that. And he said something that kind of stuck with me. And so he's like, I don't want to refer to his small ball. I refer to his playmaking ball. We want as many playmakers out on the floor as possible. Because of points like that, you get the defense scrambling. You're able to get into one action that leads to another, then another. Next thing you know, you have a wide open shot at the rim or wide open shot from three. So and when you're doing that around the talents of guys like John Morant or on Denver's case, Nikola Jokic, it's typically going to lead to good things. But Matt, that's about all the time that we have today. Do you just have any final thoughts or anything before we close the show?
Jaw's insane. Like just, I'm going back over the film from last night and he just has like four or five plays where I'm just like, oh my God, how does he do this? It's so crazy. I love this, the way this team's constructed. I love Tyus. I love DeAnthony. I love Bane. I've liked what I saw from Jaren last night. Adams is making some really slick passes out of the pinch post. This team's really exciting and fun to watch. Don't rush it. Don't get ahead. Just let it simmer. Let this soup simmer for a while before you add that final ingredient. That's the best way I think to go about it.
I couldn't agree more, but Matt, I thank you very much for joining this show. I've been following your work for a long time. You and Rob Perez are the big reasons why I subscribed to the Action Network right when it launched. So now I really appreciate it. Do you want to let anybody know where to find you and your work?
Yeah, you can check me out at the Action Network. Download the Action Network app. It's the best way for you to track scores and stuff like that. It's a great app just for tracking scores. You can check me out on Twitter at HP Basketball. I've got the Buckets podcast on the Action Network, as well as I'm the host of Locked On Nuggets. And I do Thursdays on Locked On NBA with Jackson Gatlin.
Awesome. Yeah, y'all make sure y'all check out Matt with the Action Network app and all of his mini podcasts, Buckets, Locked On Nuggets, and Locked On NBA. And for me, you can follow me on Twitter at @Pac_Flocka. Make sure you are liking, subscribing, and downloading to the Grizzly Bear Blues podcast network so you can listen to every single episode of GBB Live, the Longview podcast, the 3&D podcast, the Core 4 podcast, and the Starting 5 podcast. And make sure you are following us over on Twitter at Grizzly Bear or at SB and Grizzlies and reading our work over at grizzlybearblues.com. And that's it.